tonight to share her experience on steps 10, 11, and 12 is Kathy.
I'm an alcoholic that's been truly blessed and been given this gift of recovery. My name is Kathy. And for that, I'll be forever grateful. I was just thinking how I felt the first night I was here, and looking back, I always tell myself when I'm going out someplace and it's new, well, you're excited, because I know underneath all of that is a lot of nervousness, and but it's the same energy, you know, and I just pray to God to help me carry the message and not the mess. Thank you, Chris, for asking me to come back. I just want to really say, I know that this is a beginner's meeting, and that so touches me that you guys have beginner's meetings, and you take the beginners through all the 12 steps. I think it's just so wonderful, because there's, you know, when is the right time to get into the steps? How about now, you know? You know, how about that? This is the program of recovery. I'm just really grateful. You know, I really, absolutely, I adore AA. I love AA with all my heart. Someone asked me tonight, did I love AA more than I love them? I said, that's a very interesting question. And we'll just let it stay there for now. But what I had to learn over the years is that my sobriety, my recovery had to come first. Because what I experienced over the years is that people have died. Of course, they died on me because I'm a dramatic alcoholic, you know. People have left me. I could lose all the material things that I have. Could lose my job. That job situation's been up and down. But the only thing that you can't take from me is my recovery. That's the only thing you can't take from me. That I'd have to throw away, and that I'm not willing to do. And I learned that the hard way. And what I learned is that anything I put in front of my recovery, I'm subject to lose it quick, fast, and also lose my recovery too. I never know where I'm going to go tonight, but on my mind tonight is a man that I've sponsored over the years that I really love. And so my message is for the newcomers, please grab onto this with all your heart. You know, the authors tell us in the book, Bill tells us, we beg of you to be honest and thorough from the very start, from the beginning. Because they knew what was ahead for us. And for us old-timers, we're going to get into 10, 11, 12 tonight. And in 10, it tells us we can't rest on our laurels. We can't afford to do that, you know. One of my best friends tonight is in a mental institution who's got many years of being in this room. That nobody is exempt from anything. We can't rest. It's every day. The book says every day is a day when I have to carry this vision in. You know, this work is so important. My sponsor asked me in the beginning, am I willing to go to any length? I didn't know what that meant. I hurt so badly in the beginning that I didn't know that I was an alcoholic. I came to meetings. I just said my name. I did the best I could. I said, my name is Kathy. And then I listened to what you people shared. And then I started to identify. And the first woman that I identified with was a best friend of my sponsor. And I knew she paid that woman to say those things, you know. And I said that to her. But then I started to identify with that. And then I started to feel relief because I felt in the beginning that I was having a nervous breakdown. And I probably was, you know. And the thing that had held me together for a lot of years, now was still, alcohol always worked for me. It just worked against me in the end. You know, sometimes I would be up for a run and it would take me a lot of days to get into that place where you just feel, what Bill talks about it, the remorse and whatever of the next day. It's just, you know, how you feel. Sometimes it would take me a week to get there. At the end, I would get there in that same day. You know, in that same, as soon as I would pick up the drink, it wasn't drinking for fun anymore. It was taking me right into the pits of hell. So it was no big thing. I was so relieved when the alcohol was taken from me. And so I came into the rooms and I was as honest, and the steps 10, 11, and 12 talks about that. In 12 it talks about that. These are indispensable. Honesty, open-mindedness, and willingness. And I was sharing with someone when I couldn't get it right. Step 10 to me gives me a way to come back. And a sponsor. And I have to stress with everyone, these steps are not to be done alone. They're to be done with you and your sponsor. Mm-hmm. you know. I needed someone to take me through all 12 of them. And because the way I was and the way I used and the way I partied was that I hung in many neighborhoods. I grew up in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn. I partied in Flatbush, Coney Island Avenue, Coney Island. Then I was up into Harlem. I'm in Jamaica, Queens. I'm in Long Island. I'm all over the world. And no one ever knew Kathy because, first of all, I didn't. You know, I had to be introduced to myself. And that's what the steps did. They helped me get introduced to me, what was really inside of here. And doing them with one person was the first time in my life that I told one person all of me. I would share a little bit of me with you, a little bit of me with you, so that no one knew the real deal. And what I forgot, that I was making myself up all along. So the person you see, saw, didn't even exist anyway, you know? So, and that's when I always thought that when I got to step 8, I liked what it said in the 12 and 12, when it said that defective relationships were the cause of my alcoholism. You know, and I ran to my sponsor with that. Because I always felt the core of me was the defective relationships. That before alcohol ever touched my lips, I was having trouble with defective relationships. You know, growing up in an alcoholic household, I started to fantasize a lot of things and dream things. When reality wasn't my way, I put my own spin on it, and there I went. And when I was told when I was 12 years old that my daddy, whom I loved, he was my daddy, and the neighborhood loved him. They called him Daddy Dave. He would pile us all in cars and take us to Coney Island, and we'd be on great adventures just driving in a van, simple things. And now here's my hero. And alcoholism overtook him. It took him down and took him fast, you know. And the last 15 years of his life, he'd gone to Florida, and he found AA in Florida. And he was to be sober. And when he died, well, before he died, he came back to live with me and my daughter. I think I shared this with you guys. And I absolutely loved the man. He was like little George Burns, and he would run around my house, and he would say things, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I really thought he made it up, and when it came to AA, I was so surprised, you know. So a part of me, a part of him. He died in 85, and by 86, I was starting to bottom out. By 87, I was blessed to make it into the rooms. And I still feel with emotions, when I think of that, how blessed I am to be. It did not have to be this way. Mostly everybody that I grew up with, they're dead from this disease. They're in jail. Somebody that I knew is in jail for a double murder. I found that out recently. You know, this disease gets us and robs us young. And, you know, it's so refreshing to see a lot of young people in here. I know, like, one of the slogans that I had trouble with is, many are called and few are chosen. And in the beginning, I thought, oh, I'm one of the chosen few. Look at me. And then I started to think, what kind of an arbitrary God is that he would choose one and not the other? And I would look around the room and say, well, why is that seat empty? Why did you make it here? Maybe someone that you love very dearly didn't make it, you know? It was a hard pill for me to swallow. Well, I guess we don't want to go there anyway. But, wrong house. Anyway, then I learned it's not that many are called and few are chosen. All are called, few listen. You have to say yes to this because the higher power doesn't force this on anybody. What I love about AA is that the language of the heart is what's spoken here. And the language of the heart can cut through everything. You know, I love the title page in our big book because this is the story. It's experiential. It says this is the story of how many thousands of men and women have recovered, you know. And recovering, because this book is, it's a living, breathing book. It's designed to reach our spirit. And what I love about it is, physically I'm not feeling that great. I had to go to the doctor today. But I can come here and my spirit just gets uplifted again. Because I look at people and I know that the light starts to come on. And people's lives, man, I was part of the walking dead. I never smoked crack, thank God. But there was a stroll in Rockaway, and I used to go by, and I used to see the girls doing what they had to do to get what they had to get. And I saw that dead look in their eye, and I immediately identified. There's no better than. When I was drinking, it was, well, I'm okay because I'm not a wino, you know, until I became a wino, you know. I'm okay because I'm not doing this until I did that, you know. So it's like alcohol was the great equalizer, put me on equal level. So, I have to tell you my experience with step 10, how much I loved it. I had issues with resentments in early recovery for 2 years. I couldn't get a resentment out of my head. It owned me. I don't know if I shared this with you guys, but I tried everything. Somebody told me put a rubber band on your hand, on your wrist, and pull it every time you thought of the person. I did that, and I walked around with a sore wrist, you know. I wasn't getting it, you know. They said, say the serenity prayer all the time. Now I'm hating God. I'm hating the serenity prayer, you know. Then they told me the short version of the serenity prayer. I said, I did whatever you told me. I tried. And then I ran to my sponsor, and I said, I can't get past this. She said, pray for the person. I said, I will not. And I said, you pray for them. She said, I already am. So now I'm mad with her, you know. But anyway, I prayed, and it wasn't removed right away. It took time. But the prayer, what happened with that resentment, it helped me to start form. Because when I came into the rooms, I didn't believe in God. The thing that I didn't realize that I had going for me was that I desperately wanted to. I was so willing to believe in God. I wanted to so badly. It's just that my preconceived ideas of God weren't working anymore. You know, the God that in the school that I went to, they kind of put it in. It didn't work for me. And I was reading something today about not trying to belittle somebody else's religion. It might have been the religion of my childhood. It just didn't work for me. But it means the world to somebody else, you know. So I really don't want to go there with it. But so I don't know how. I don't remember the date when I found this. It's on page 84. But it tells me what to do. And this is the thing that worked. And it, to me, it was very simple. To me, 2 plus 2 is a mathematical equation, axiom, whatever you want to call it. 2 plus 2 will always equal 4. No matter if it's 2 apples, 2 oranges, put them together, you're always going to get 4. To me, this was like a spiritual theory. You know, and I tried it, and I have to tell you, this is the thing that worked for me. And it's interesting, because when I first came into the rooms, I wasn't frightened of the beginning steps. I wasn't frightened of step 4. I was still so full of myself that I loved talking about me. It was my favorite subject, you know. And I love boring you to death about it, you know. And so when it was time to do the 4th step, there were things that I was terribly ashamed of. You know, I was sharing with... I love what happens in here, the God instances, when we catch God working. Someone told me that they were here a couple of weeks ago, and we were talking on 4, 5, and 6, and then his sponsee called him, and then the next thing, that he's doing the 5th step with her. That, to me, is God working, God getting the ground ready. And I would go, it's so important for me to have my sponsor and to go to meetings where my sponsor went, especially in those beginning days, because I was so ashamed, because, you see, you women weren't like me. You didn't do the things that I did. You just weren't that bad, you know. And if you knew what I was really like, you probably, and I'm telling you the truth, this is how I felt for myself for many years in the rooms. And I always had a picture in the back of my mind of this dirty little girl. It's a picture that I think I remember seeing of myself, and I don't think I had a shirt on. I think my hair was unkempt, and I'm running around. I grew up in Sheepshead Bay, Brooklyn, and we didn't have shoes all week long because we grew up right on the waterfront. We ran around barefoot. We had a pair of shoes for church on Sunday, you know. But that's the picture. And a lot of times when I would go to things in recovery, it wasn't Kathy with 30 days that showed up. It was the dirty little girl that showed up. It wasn't Kathy with 15, 20 years that showed up in some instances. Dirty little girl would show up, and I would feel so ashamed. And I would sit around with these people, and I'm going for a master's degree, and I'm saying, if these people just knew who they were in this room with, you know? And it took a long time. But I'll tell you, every time I've gone through 4 and 5 several times, and every single time I've gone through it, I was given a gift, a real gift. Every time I go on a retreat, I get a gift. It's just many gifts. It's just beautiful. And this last time when I did this, the 5th step, with a man guided me through it. He said, Kathy, it's time to bury. It's time. You got to bury that dirty little girl. Got to bury her. She doesn't exist anymore. And I didn't want to. And I didn't realize that. It was kind of like a comfort. You know what happened too? Because over the years, first I hated her, and then I started to love her. And then after that, I'm starting to hold on to that, because now that's like a crutch, that's like an excuse. And it was time to put her down. And I went through a mourning period with that, if that makes sense to anybody. That was just my experience. You know? And people in the rooms in the beginning told me, say these positive affirmations. I always felt less than. I think I heard another speaker share, and I identify with this, that my memory goes back as far as feeling less than. I don't remember a time in my life when I didn't feel less than. I remember being a little girl in my household trying to find my birth certificate because I thought I was adopted, because I thought there was something wrong. Okay, so, you know, it's, I love when we speak sometimes and someone shakes their head because there's somebody else identifying with that. You know, I felt different in my own family. You know, and there was a lie. There was a secret that was in my family. And I didn't know what it was. I was to find out later on. But being alcoholic and being so sensitive, I thought it had to do with me. You know, I had to have caused something somewhere, you know. And I had to learn to love that little four-year-old girl, you know, and go through a lot of different memories. And what healed me is God in the steps. I went to therapy. I did inner child work. And all of it was wonderful. And it was going through the steps that helped me. That helped me find me. But here we go. I know eventually I'm going to get back to where I started from. Page 84. It says to continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. It's very interesting and uses the word continue. Why? Because they're going to continue to show up. You know? Because I have 10 years sober. Yeah, they're going to continue to show up. And I have 1 year sober. You know who impressed me the most? One of the girls that I sponsored today. When I came in 87, she was here before me, and she had 16 days. And there's people in Rockaway, even at that time, they had 10 years, they had 5 years, they had a year. But this girl, she told me she had 16 days. And I said, in a row? And she, I was like, you know what I mean? That I could wrap my head around. How do you, 2 weekends? You did this straight? And she said, yeah. Like, she was shocked too, you know? So, it's just, you know, wherever it comes from. And then another newcomer shared with me there's so many things that I've held on to over the years. Because then sometimes I would come in here and I would share the painful things that was going on. And someone shared with me, Kathy, it doesn't matter if you share negatively, it doesn't matter if you share positively, it matters if you share honestly. And I learned how to take off the mask. Anyway, continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. When they crop up, here's the plan right here. When they crop up, because they're going to crop up, we ask God at once to remove them. It's not that I go to God and start building my case, because now I'm going to get resentful all over again. It's remove them. And be honest with yourself. How many times at night before you fall in asleep, you get that juicy resentment and you like you want to chew it like a dog with a bone? You know what I mean? And it's like, and now I'm going to tell them this, and then I'm going to do that. And I'm always winning there, you know? But when you get with the people, it just never worked out that way anyway. And then you get to a point where you realize you're harming yourself. And now it's time. So I go to God and I ask Him to remove them. Not help me with them. Remove it. I discuss them with someone immediately. Got to be careful here. I do that after I go to God. Because otherwise I can get with my friends and build my case. And then you'll be hating the other person too, you know? And then make amends quickly if we have harmed anyone. In most cases, I'm usually harming myself. And that means it tells me right next what to do. Then we resolutely, big word, resolutely turn our thoughts to someone we can help. What I've learned about me, maybe it's not true for you. I've got over 20 years in this room. I can still be obsessive. I can still be compulsive today. Okay? I can come and speak about spiritual things and walk out of here, and the obsession could kick in tonight. Okay? But I know that about me. I'm obsessive. I'm compulsive. And I started to... When I went through the character defects enough, I started to, sometimes I even laugh, oh, they're back again, you know. I don't laugh too often, but sometimes. But anyway, I know I'm going to obsess and compulse, so it's better that my thoughts are to somebody else and try to think about how I can help them. So step 10 to me has changed a lot over the years. I always thought it was the written inventory step, but I found out more that that's more an 11. What I love about step 10 is it gives us the step 10 promises, and they've come to mean more to me than any of the promises in the book, because this is mostly where I live on most days. Most days, I'm not interested in alcohol. I don't think about alcohol, and I don't not think about alcohol. It just doesn't even exist for me. I love what it says, We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given to us without any thought or effort on my part. I'm not thinking the drink through. Thank God. You know, thank God. Because if you can get anything out of this, it's that thinking mind that will always take me back to something that's going to harm me. It will, and it dresses itself up very nicely, you know, puts on whatever it has to put on to appeal to me, you know, because it's in my head. But this, it's been removed, and it to me, that's been a gift from my higher power. But it gives us huge warnings after this. It says it's easy to let up on the spiritual program of action and rest on our laurels. And what I've learned this week is that we really can't afford to. Every day is a day when I have to do this. You know, I've heard, for me, the definition of insanity when I hear people share in the rooms, I got 5 years sober and I've got no sponsor and I'm right where I'm supposed to be. I got 7 years sober and I'm not doing any step work and I'm right where I'm supposed to be. And I've seen people go to jail in recovery and I've seen people end up on the psych ward in recovery too. And that's a horrible place to think that, is that where you're supposed to be, you know? I really think not. So 10 has meant a lot to me. And step 11 to me, it talks about prayer and meditation. In the early days, I always wanted to meditate. I learned through going on different big book weekends that the meditation they're talking about in this book wasn't really exactly the kind of meditation. Meditation started to change in the 60s. But in the 30s, in a dictionary, meditation meant as a general contemplates his battle plan in a war. You know, you think about your day. You meditate what you're going to be. But in the beginning, what I used to do, I love Rockaway Beach. I would sit on the beach. I would watch the waves of the ocean coming in. And when the waves came in, I would visualize that's God just giving me his power, just filling me with all his power. And then when the waves went out, I just visualized that God was taking everything from me that I didn't need. It was love coming in, love going throughout. And I would just sit 10 days sober, 30 days sober. And that's what worked for me. There were many simple meditations. A psychiatrist gave me one when I was still active. And he said, close your eyes and picture a circle and then write the capital letter A in it and then erase it. And then write the capital letter B in it and erase it. And go through the whole alphabet. And what it does is it forces your mind to go to one thing. It's a very simple form of meditation. Doesn't offend anybody's religion or anything. And those are the things that helped me in the early days. Meditations changed a lot for me over the years. I like guided meditations. I like it all. And prayer, what I loved, Ray was showing me step 11. What I loved about it was that now I get to design my own prayer life. And I felt like, wow, that, you know, now I'm doing something. And what I try to do is, because it has the questions on 86. Okay, let me go there first. I guess that's where I'm going. When we retire at night, we constructively review our day. I try to do this every day. I don't always, but I try. And I'll tell you, it says when we retire at night, I don't do this at nighttime. I haven't been able to do this as a newcomer. Even though my inventory at night was different, I have never been successful in taking inventory at night before I go to bed. It doesn't work for me. I'm usually up around 5 o'clock in the morning, and that's when I review the day before. It works better for me. Whatever works for you. In the book, it says, they suggest we do it at night, and it's got like 12 different questions to ask ourselves. And that has helped me tremendously. And what I love what it says, that we must be careful not to drift into worry, remorse, or morbid reflection. Because I can take my inventory at night and use it in a very negative way to harm myself. And that's not what this is about, you know. And then after the review, I ask God's forgiveness and I inquire what corrective measures should be taken. And I just get my pen and I just write whatever comes to me. And that's usually what I try to follow. And it says, and then it tells me what to do when I awaken. Before we begin, when my mind is starting to wake up and I realize that I'm coming to in the morning, I try to say, God, direct my thinking, divorce my mind. Divorce my mind from selfishness, dishonesty, because that can get up there like real fast before my feet hit the floor and I hit the bathroom. So I try to say that while I'm still in bed. And it's interesting that they use the word divorced, because if I got to divorce it from something, that means it was a marriage at one time. And that means I was really aligned with these things. So now they're being ripped out. So that's what I do. And I say my third step prayer in the morning and the 10th step prayer. And then I say other prayers. And do I pray for people? Yeah, I still do. No. And then I think about the day ahead of me. Maybe I got a meeting on the job. God, please help me to keep my mouth shut. Don't let me curse anybody out, tell anybody off. You know. But it's been, it works. It works. I used to always call step 11 the PMS step in early days. Matter of fact, 10, 11, and 12 was like that for me. Prayer, meditation, and service is what it turned into. But PMS, pain, misery, and suffering, gets transformed into the peace in the midst of the storm, another PMS, through prayer, meditation, and service. And it's those simple little things stick with me, and they worked. In step 12, there's so many different chapters here on step 12. It tells us, it gives advice to the wives, to the employers, to the family afterward, working with others. It tells us how to sponsor other people. And it also tells me, see, my recovery depends on the newcomers too and on the people that I'm taking through the steps. And if I'm there and I'm struggling with you and you really don't want this, you're not helping yourself and you're definitely not helping me either. And my sponsor used to tell me that all the time. And there may come a time where I got to cut you loose. And let me tell you something, having codependency in here, very rarely do I let anybody go. And it's with huge claw marks on their back. But step 12 tells me, having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, I had to learn what a spiritual awakening was. I thought it was this big mystical thing. And there were many things in the big book that led me to it. First of all, on 27, and page 27, well, in those pages, there is a solution. Carl Jung is telling Roland Hazard that you have to have a spiritual experience. And he's trying to describe what it is. And he's telling them, really, it's like all of a sudden your old ideas are being transformed and now you have new ideas. And the old ideas to me was, what can I get out of this? What is this? What's in it for me? You know, where can I get high tonight? You know, who am I going to drink with now? And now all of a sudden the new ideas for newcomers, what I found is, what meeting can I go to tonight? Can I give somebody a ride? Where can I be of service? So it's gradual. And usually what I find out is that our friends and family members usually see it in us before we even recognize it. I was usually the last to know. And I like what it said on page 58. It talks about some of us try to hold on to our old ideas. This is, you know, when they're getting into the steps. And the result is nil. It's nothing. So what I learned from this, it wasn't the new stuff coming in that was causing me problems. It's what I really thought I believed with all my heart, all my life. That's what was harming me. And for me, it was the childhood messages that I was given. And in my household, it was only the strong survive. And thank God I don't have to pretend to be strong today. You know, thank God that it is people that I meet that I can take the mask off and share honestly with. And you might not like it, but you know what? Pretty much what you see is what you get, because that's pretty much who I am. So having had a spiritual, as a result of these steps, we try to carry this message to alcoholic. What is the message that we're trying to carry? It's the message that was started on the cover page, on the title page. It's all through the book. And to practice these principles in all our affairs, to me, that's the harder part. That I try to bring into step 11, because it says that love and tolerance is our code now. And that's not just a passive thing. It's not just a thought, or maybe I'll act, you know, maybe loving and tolerant is nice to be. No, I got to practice that. I got to go to a boss that there's times when I can't stand him, and I've got to practice being loving to him. And I like the word practice because a lot of times I don't get it right. So I can practice it again. And what I've learned with the 11th step especially is that these steps are not designed to beat myself up. I always get a chance to do it again. It's never going to be perfect. But what happens is this, is that other person may never change, but I do. We tried this one time years ago. I work in a boys' home, and this week I'm not loving my job, but for all these millions of years that I've been there, I've loved that job, and I've had kids over the years, and I work with some kids that people would move out of town to rather than cross the same street with them. But I love them. I just, and I made a decision years ago. There was one kid that was just, oh my God, No one in the place liked them. And I had a meeting with all the staff, and I said, we're going to practice something. No one's going to say anything negative to this young guy. And that was very hard. You got a kid in your face telling you to go, where to go, when to go, how to go, and you're going to be loving to him. And we did it, and we stuck through it for a month. And the kid changed before our eyes because we changed, you know. And that's what happens from going through this process of the steps. I have had many staff members that I couldn't stand. I prayed to God. I realized that if God was to remove these resentments, I wouldn't have, if God was to remove my character defects, I wouldn't have the resentment to begin with. And that helped me when I go into situations and I meet, because not everybody's going to get along with everybody. It's just, I don't know if it's chemistry, I don't know what it is, but someone comes along and they just set off something inside of me. And when I go in prayer, it changes my whole thing, my whole notion of the person. And it comes with just making a decision. I make a decision to love them. I don't have to like them. I love them. And I just have to tell you that it works. I just want to end in saying, guys, I want to thank you so much being with you. But before I took this commitment here, I would sit here and I would be terrified to raise my hand. I would have to talk to myself and tell myself, raise your hand. Do I still go through that? Yeah, you know? And being here, I started to feel a little more part of your group. And I know that you're just strangers or just friends that I haven't met yet. So thank you very much.